Bleak House by Charles Dickens. Dramatized in 8 episodes by Betty Davis. With Michael Bryant and Brenda Blethyn as Esther Summerson. Part 8. The Mistress of Bleak House.
Sir Leicester Dedlock lies abed in the Dedlock townhouse, enjoined to silence and to rest. He is never asleep, though sometimes he seems to fall into a dull, waking doze. All his mind, all his spirit, all his heart are with the man he has dispatched to search for his missing lady.
Oh, don't be alarmed, Mr. Jarndyce. I've had the pleasure of seeing you before, Inspector Bucket of the detectives.
I remember you, Inspector.
Look at this handkerchief, sir.
It belongs to Miss Summerson.
Yes, got a name on it. I found it myself in a drawer of Lady Dedlock's room 1/4 hour ago. You know Lady Dedlock?
Yes.
Now, there's been a discovery there today. Family affairs have come out. Sir Leicester Dedlock's collapsed, apoplexy or paralysis. Yes, precious time has been lost. Lady Dedlock disappeared this afternoon and left a letter. It looks like suicide.
Oh.
And there's more danger of that every minute. Now, Sir Leicester's employed me to follow her and find her, to save her and to take her his forgiveness. I have money and full power, but I want something else. I want Miss Summerson.
Why, Inspector?
Lady Dedlock thinks she's suspected of murder.
Oh.
She isn't. But if I follow her alone, she may be driven to desperation. But if I follow her in company with a young lady she has a tenderness for, she'll give me credit for being friendly, so I want Miss Summerson.
She's upstairs. I'll go and speak to her.
My guardian's told me what has happened, sir. Of course I must come with you.
Thank you, miss. Thank you very much. Now, first of all, let me ask you this. Is there anyone in whom her ladyship might have been likely to confide?
Only my guardian, but she hasn't done so.
No one else?
Perhaps Mr. Boythorn. He was engaged to her sister, and he's always had a high regard for Lady Dedlock.
Where can we find him?
He lives in Lincolnshire. His estate adjoins Sir Leicester's.
I doubt she'd go that near home, but we can try. Right, miss, there's a carriage outside. You wrap up well, mind. It's a desperate sharp night for a young lady to be out.
I will.
It may be a long job, but if it ends well, never mind.
Off and away through a labyrinth of streets, until the carriage stops at the corner of a little slimy turning that the night wind from the river rushing up it does not purify. Against the mouldering wall is a bill headed, Found Drowned. And Esther sits all alone in the horror of a dream while a man in sodden boots and muddy clothing takes Inspector Bucket down a flight of slippery steps to look at something. But it is not that which they are seeking.
Well, we're out of London now, Miss Summerson. An old acquaintance of yours, this road.
Is it the road to St. Albans?
Yes, it is. You were alarmed when we went down to the river, weren't you?
At first I was.
Don't be. I only wanted to have everything in train, and the only way to see it was by looking after it myself.
Have you found any trace of her?
None that can be depended on, but it's early days yet. We'll stop and have a word with the keeper at the next turnpike. It's about a mile ahead. Tea for you, Miss Summerson. Drink it. Do you good.
Oh, thank you.
That's right. You're beginning to look more yourself now. It was what you might call stunned at first, and no wonder. It's all right. She's on ahead.
Oh!
Shh. Don't speak loud, my dear. She passed here on foot this evening, about 8 or 9. I heard of her first at the archway wall at Highgate, but couldn't be sure. But she's before us now, all right. Had enough of that tea. Here! Take hold of this cup and saucer, hostler.
Right, sir.
He wasn't brought up in the butter trade. See if you can catch half a crown in your other hand.
Oh.
Now, will I? Try a gallop. On to St. Albans. Nope. She didn't come to Bleak House. I didn't expect anything in our way to turn up here, but I had to be certain. Now, you tell me, her ladyship got your handkerchief from a brickmaker's cottage.
Yes, it's very near here.
I know the place. We can't go there too soon. This is a nice retired place. Came down here a little time ago looking for an acquaintance of yours, the young crossing sweeper.
Joe, had he committed any crime?
No. I wanted him in connection with keeping this matter of Lady Dedlock quiet. He'd been making his tongue too free as to an accidental service he'd been paid for by the late Mr. Tulkinghorn. I wanted him out of London, and further out of London than this.
Poor creature.
Poor enough and trouble enough. I found him, though. Miss Summerson, that elderly young gentleman who stays here sometimes, what's his name?
Harold Skimpole.
Harold, yes. He's a queer bird, is Harold. No idea of money. He takes it, though.
Oh, you know him.
Met him once, when I was looking for Joe. I saw him in the garden. I thought, you're the man for me. I said I'd consider a £5 note well bestowed if I could relieve the premises of Joe, and I hands one over. He says, I don't know the value of these things. I'm a mere child in such matters. What have I to do with this? Spend it, sir, I says. Of course, he told me where Joe was. I found him and took him away.
He told you? That was very treacherous of him.
Miss Summerson, whenever a person says to you, as they're innocent as can be in money matters, look after your own money, for they're dead certain to collar it if they can. Now, Miss Whittier, I'll leave these inquiries to you, if you'll be so good as to make them. The naturalist way is the best way, and the naturalist way is your own way.
May we come in?
Yeah, if he wants to.
Isn't Jenny here?
No, she ain't. What do you want?
I've come a long way through the night to inquire after a lady.
The lady that was here last night?
Who told you she was here?
Person of the name of Michael Jackson, with a blue velveteen waistcoat.
He'd do better to mind his own business, whoever he is.
I should like to have seen Jenny. Where is she?
She's gone up to London.
Oh, did she go last night?
Yeah, she went last night.
Was she here when the lady came?
Yeah, she was.
What did the lady say?
She asked if you were up at the house. We said you wasn't, so she rested herself on that bed there for an hour or so. Then she went at 20 minutes past 11. Or it may have been at 20 minutes past 12. We ain't got no watches here.
Where? Oh, please tell me. Where did she go?
I don't know where she goed. She went one way and Jenny went another. One went right to London, t'other went right away from it. And that's all about it.
Well, that's it then. Thank you for your information.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, he won't get any more from him. But he's got her ladyship's watch. That's positive.
You saw it?
That's good. 20 minutes past. He don't usually cut his time as fine as that. Either her ladyship gave him the watch or he took it. I think she gave it to him.
Why?
That's it. Why? What did she give it to him for? I don't take kindly to laying out Sir Leicester's money on that rough. And I don't see the usefulness of it at present. No. Our road, Miss Summerson, is forward, straight ahead, and keeping everything quiet.
At first there is news of her. The dress has been seen, and it seems that she is indeed making her way to Chesney Wold. But soon Bucket begins to look anxious, for now his inquiries yield no response. No one has seen her. All trace of the dress has been lost. Until night. Esther, cold and sick at heart, waits in the carriage while the horses are changed. But when Bucket approaches, lantern in hand, he is an excited and different man.
What is it? Is she here?
No, my dear, nobody's here, but I've got it.
What? I didn't...
Now, miss, don't you be disappointed at what I'm going to do. You can trust me. Come on with those horses for the next stage. Up!
Up! Jimmy, up or down?
Up, I tell you, when I speak in English, up!
Right. To London? Are we going back?
Back, straight as a die. I'll follow the other, by God!
The other? But I...
Oh. You called her Jenny, didn't you? I'll follow her. Bring those two pair out here for Crown Man! Wake up, some of you!
Oh, but you won't desert the lady we're in search of. You won't abandon her on such a night, in her state of mind.
No, my dear, I won't, but I'll follow the other. Look alive with him horses! My darling, don't be afraid. Excuse me if I'm too familiar, but don't you fret and worry yourself more than you can help. You know me now, don't you?
Oh, yes, but is this right? Can't we go to find my mother?
My dear, I knows that, and I won't put you wrong. Keep up your heart, and I'll stand by you.
Are you right there?
All right, sir.
Off she goes, then, and get on, my lads.
Still impassive, as befits its breeding, the Dedlock townhouse carries itself as usual. Sir Leicester has caused his bed to be moved nearer the window, so that he can see the driving snow and sleet. He has watched it all through the winter day. Now night has fallen, but he will not allow the lamps to be lit, perhaps because he does not wish to admit that another day is over and his lady is still missing.
Mrs. Runswell.
Yes, Sir Leicester. I'm here.
I was afraid you had left me. Who is that?
It's my son, George, Sir Leicester. I found him. He's come home.
George? Your son, George, has come home?
Thank God. Yes, Sir Leicester.
Do you remember me, George?
Of course I do, sir.
When I look at you, I see something of a boy at Chesney Wold. I remember well, very well. Long ago, you carried my spare gun at Chesney Wold. You are familiar to me in strange circumstances. You find me far from well, George Runswell.
I'm very sorry to see it, Sir Leicester.
I'm sure you are. Something that deadens and confuses. Unfortunately, it happened when there was a slight misunderstanding between my lady and myself. I wish to say, and I wish you both to witness, that I am on unaltered terms with Lady Dedlock. I have ever had the strongest affection for her, and I retain it undiminished.
Of course, Sir Leicester.
My lady is too high in position, too handsome, too superior in all respects to the best of those by whom she is surrounded, not to have her enemies and traducers. Let it be known to them that I have no cause for complaint against her. I am on unaltered terms with her, and I revoke no act that I have done for her advantage and happiness.
George Runswell watches by him through the black, wintry night, and, familiar with his unexpressed wish, extinguishes the light and draws the curtains at first dawn. The day comes like a phantom. Cold, colorless, and vague, it sends a warning streak before it of a death-like hue, as if it cried out, "Look what I am bringing you who watch there. Who will tell him?"
Now, my dear, we're going to mark down this person we're following. It may take a little time, but you don't mind that. You're pretty sure I've got a motive, ain't you?
I have confidence in you, Mr. Bucket.
So you may have, my dear. If you've half as much confidence in me as I have in you, that'll do. Lord, you're no trouble at all. You're a pattern, that's what you are.
He did not stop again to make inquiries until we were within a few miles of London. I cannot speak of what I felt when I thought that we were leaving my mother further and further behind every minute. Before dawn, we came into London and changed into a hackney coach. Where we drove then, I did not know, but we seemed to seek out the narrowest and the worst streets in London. Often we stopped at police offices, or he consulted with policemen patrolling the streets. At last, after a rather long conversation with one officer, he came back to the carriage looking very busy and attentive and asked if I would mind walking a little way.
It ain't so easy to keep your feet, my dear, but take time.
Oh, the thoroughfare where we left the carriage, was that Holborn?
Yes. Do you know where we are now?
It looks like Chancery Lane.
And was Chrisenthal, my dear.
Miss Summerson!
Hi, Mr. Woodcourt!
Your guardian told me you'd been called away on urgent business, but that you should be here at such an hour and in such weather.
We're going into the next street, Mr. Woodcourt.
Here, take my cloak, Miss Summerson.
Oh, thank you.
That's a good move.
May I go with you?
Why, Lord, of course you may.
I've just left Richard. I've been sitting with him since 10 o'clock last night.
No, is he ill?
No, not ill, but not quite well. He was depressed and feverish, and Ada sent for me. But he's better now.
Well, now, Mr. Woodcourt, our business takes me to a law stationer's here, a Mr. Snagsby's.
I know him.
I'll leave you with Miss Summerson while I go and have a word with him. The person we're following came here, miss, and gave a letter to Mr. Snagsby's servant. She was seen, all right.
Oh, a letter? Oh, could it be a message from... from the lady?
We'll have to see, miss. Excuse me.
May I stay with you, Miss Summerson? I don't want to intrude upon your confidence.
Oh, you're very kind. I'd never want to keep any secret of my own from you, but this is another's.
I understand. I promise you I'll go if my presence troubles you.
Oh, I trust you. I know how sacredly you keep your promises.
Now, my dear, you're steady and sure of yourself?
Quite.
Whose writing is that? It's addressed to you at your guardian's.
Yes, it's...
Ah, you know the hand. Can you read it to me?
Yes. It's been written in three parts. I came to the cottage with two objects, to see the dear one once more, without speaking to her, and to be lost forever. Do not blame Jenny, the mother, for her share in this. She helped me when I told her it was for the dear one's sake. The man's consent I bought, but hers was freely given.
Ah, that was written at St. Albans, then. Go on.
Oh, this seems to come later. I have wandered a long distance, and I know I must soon die. Cold, wet, and fatigue are sufficient reasons, but I shall die of terror. And my conscience.
Courage. Is there much more?
A few lines. I think they must have been written in the dark. I have done all I could to be lost. I shall be soon forgotten so. The place where I shall lie down, if I can get so far, has been often in my mind. Farewell.
There. Cheer up. Don't think me hard now, but we must hurry.
But where?
I think I know that, my dear. Trust me.
Shall I go?
Oh, please don't leave me now.
No, don't you go, sir. We may want you.
It was neither night nor day. The street lamps weren't yet put out, and the sleet was still falling. All the ways were deep in it. I remember the wet housetops, the clogged and bursting gutters and water spouts, the mounds of blackened ice and snow, and the narrow courts by which we went. At last, we stood under a dark and miserable covered way, where one lamp was burning over an iron gate. The gate was closed. Beyond it was a burial ground, a dreadful spot, hemmed in by filthy houses. On the step at the gate, drenched in the fearful wet of such a place, which oozed and splashed over everything, a woman was lying. Jenny! It's Jenny!
Wait, miss. You'll understand me if you think a moment. They changed clothes at the cottage.
What?
And one returned, and one went on. And the one that went on only went a certain way and then turned across country and went home. Think a moment.
I don't understand.
Shall she go?
Best let her, sir. Her hand shall be the first to touch her. They have a higher right than ours.
I heard all this, but I had not the least idea what it meant. I saw before. I saw before me Jenny, the mother of the dead child. She lay there, she who had brought my mother's letter and could guide us to save and rescue her. I passed on to the gate and stooped down. I lifted the heavy head, put the long, dank hair aside and looked at the face. And it was my mother, cold and dead. I fell ill. I was ill for some time. We stayed in London, and I was surrounded by the loving care of all about me. I will not speak of it more. When I was well again, I resumed my work, and my guardian spoke to me in his old way.
Well, Dame Durden, welcome to the growlery again. I have a scheme to develop. I propose to stay here in London for 6 months, perhaps for longer. Quite to settle here, in fact.
And in the meantime, leave Bleak House?
Bleak House must learn to take care of itself. Yes, take care of itself. It's a long way from Ada, and Ada needs you. Besides, I want news of her as often as possible, and of Rick, of course.
Have you seen Mr. Woodcourt this morning?
I see him every day.
What does he say about Richard?
Oh, just the same. He knows of no bodily illness, yet he's not easy about him. Who could be?
When we spoke of Mr. Woodcourt before, you said you thought he might go to another country. Do you know if he's decided on this?
I think not.
Or perhaps some other prospect is open to him.
Yes, perhaps. In 6 months' time, a medical attendant for the poor is to be appointed at a certain place in Yorkshire.
Oh.
It's a pleasant, thriving place, and seems to present an opening for such a man.
Oh, will he get the appointment, do you think?
Not being an oracle, I can't confidently say, but I think so.
Oh.
It's a great deal of work for little money, but better things will gather about it, I hope.
We said no more about it, nor about the future of Bleak House. Soon I began to visit Richard and Ada every day in the dull, dark corner where they lived. I knew very well that now Ada's money too was melting away, and they were getting poorer and poorer. I went one evening to dine with them, and as I turned into Simmons Inn, I met little Miss Flight coming out.
My dear, so glad to see you. Are you going to visit the interesting Jarndyce ward?
Yes.
Our beauty is at home and will be charmed to see you.
Oh, then Richard has not yet come in.
No, I left him in court with Vholes. Don't like Vholes. Dangerous man.
I'm afraid you see Richard more often than ever now.
Daily and hourly, my dear. Next to myself, he is the most constant suitor in court. I will tell you a secret. I have made him my executor. Oh. In my will.
Oh, indeed.
Yes. If I should wear out, he will be able to watch that judgment, being so regular in his attendance. I did at one time mean to appoint poor Gridley, but he wore out, so I have appointed his successor, and my dear, I have added to my collection of birds.
Really, Miss Flight?
2 more. I call them the wards in Jarndyce. They are caged up with the rest of them. Hope, joy, youth, peace, rest, life. Dust, ashes, waste, want, ruin, despair, madness, death. Folly, words, wigs, rags, sheepskins, plunder, precedent, jargon, gammon and spinach. And now, the wards in Jarndyce.
A dark place, Miss Summerson, for a life that's not an official one.
There's not much to see here, certainly, Mr. Vholes.
Nor to hear. I hope Mr. Jarndyce is well.
Thank you. He's quite well.
Miss Summerson, this was an ill-advised marriage of Mr. C.
Mr. Vholes, please, I would prefer not to discuss it. They became engaged when they were both very young, and when their prospects were much brighter.
Just so. But I consider it a very ill-advised marriage indeed. I wish to be open with you. I consider Mr. C's affairs in a very bad way. I consider Mr. C himself in a very bad way. And I regard this as a very ill-advised marriage.
Dinner won't be long, Vholes. I hope you're not pressed for time.
I'm but a poor knife and fork, as you know, Mr. C, so I'm not impatient. And I'm enjoying the pleasure of some agreeable conversation with Miss Summerson, for which I thank you very much.
After dinner, Mr. Vholes departed to return to his office and attend, as he said, to the interests of his client. Richard looked very weary and flung himself down on the sofa until Alan Woodcourt arrived, as it seemed he often did, and proposed to him that they should take a short walk. So Ada and I were left alone. She had been singing and playing to us, and now she still sat at the piano. I put my arm around her.
Esther?
Yes?
I want to be a good wife, a very, very good wife. You must teach me.
You have little to learn.
When I married him, I knew the danger he was in. I thought I might convince him of his mistakes. But if I'd not had that hope, I'd have married him just the same.
I know.
Don't think I don't see what you see and fear what you fear. I see him at his worst every day. But I determined never to show him I grieved for what he did. I want him when he comes home to see no trouble in my face. I want him to see what he loved in me. I married him to do this, and this supports me. And something else supports me now, Esther. I look forward a little while. Soon great aid will come to me. When Richard turns his eyes on me, there may be something lying on my breast, more eloquent than I have been, to show him his true course and win him back.
Ada. Oh, my dearest Ada.
That hope sustains me. Though sometimes I lose even that, and a dread comes over me when I look at Richard.
Oh, dearest, what dread?
That he may not live to see his child.
I can never forget that day. I never see that wretched corner of Simmons Inn now. I never want to see it. But in my memory, there is a mournful glory shining in the place, which will shine forever. I was there at all hours. When I left at night, I generally went home in a cab, but sometimes my guardian would meet me in the neighbourhood, and we'd walk back to Oxford Street together. One evening he'd arranged to meet me at 8 o'clock, but I left late, and when Mr. Woodcourt, who like me was there every night, escorted me to our usual rendezvous, my guardian was not there. We waited half an hour, but there was no sign of him, so Mr. Woodcourt walked home with me. The house was empty. My guardian was not there. We were alone, and as we stood by the open window, looking out into the street, Mr. Woodcourt spoke to me, and I learned that he loved me. What I had thought was pity was love, devoted, faithful love. Now I knew it. Too late. Too late.
When I came back, no richer than when I went away, when I found you, newly recovered from a grave illness, yet so full of sweet consideration for others, so free from a selfish thought.
I don't deserve your praise. I had many selfish thoughts at that time, many.
Heaven knows, beloved of my life, this isn't a lover's praise, it's the truth. You do not know how you are admired, how you are loved.
It's a great thing to win love. I am so proud, but I am not free to think of yours.
Then, dear Esther, I will not urge it. I always hoped that when I first seemed to stand in any way of good fortune, I would tell you this. I always feared it would be too late. So, both my hopes and fears are fulfilled.
Don't go. Not yet. What you have said will not be lost. It shall make me better. And it would not have moved me so much from anyone but you. I shall never forget this night. As long as I live, I will have the pride and joy of knowing that you loved me. Good night. And goodbye.
The first, until we meet tomorrow. The second as a farewell to this theme forever.
Yes.
Then good night. And goodbye.
He left me. And I stood at the dark window watching the street. But soon it was blotted out by my rushing tears. I learned from my guardian the next day what I had already guessed, that Mr. Woodcourt had obtained the appointment in Yorkshire, and I determined that the time had come to say something that had long been in my mind. Dear guardian, have I been remiss in anything?
Remiss, Esther?
Since I gave you your answer, have I not been what I meant to be?
You've been everything I could desire, my love.
You said to me, is this the mistress of Bleak House? And I said yes.
I remember.
Since then, we've only spoken of it once.
When I said Bleak House was thinning fast.
Yes, and I said, but its mistress remains. Oh, you are so considerate and so much has happened. But now I'm well again. I will be the mistress of Bleak House whenever you please.
Oh, why, what a sympathy there must be between us. When you came in, my mind was full of it. When shall we give Bleak House its mistress?
When you please.
Next month?
Next month.
So, the day on which I take the happiest and best step of my life, the day I give Bleak House its little mistress, shall be next month, then?
It shall, dear guardian.
Hmm?
Inspector Bucket, sir.
Oh, Mr. Bucket, come in.
Mr. Jarndyce and Miss Summerson, with apologies for intruding, will you allow me to call in a person that's outside and objects to being left there in case of being the subject of observation in his absence?
Of course.
Thank you.
Be so good as to chair that there member in this direction, will you?
Carry me.
Now, let's have the door shut.
You know me, Mr. Jarndyce, and you know me, Miss Summerson. This gentleman likewise knows me, and his name is Smallweed. He's a dealer in bills.
No, I ain't.
Now, this gentleman's premises are on the premises of the late Crook, marine stores dealer, a relation of his. You knew Crook, didn't you, sir?
Yes.
Well, this gentleman has come into his property. And a good deal of magpie property there was. A lot of it, bless you, of no use for nobody. But this gentleman naturally begins to rummage.
To what? Say that again.
To rummage. Being a prudent man, you begin to rummage among Crook's papers.
Of course I do.
Of course you do. And so you chance to find a paper with the signature of Jarndyce on it, don't you?
Yes.
You're not curious to read it. Why should you be? But when you come to look at it, all in good time, what do you find it to be but a will?
I don't know that it's good, mind.
Notwithstanding which, as you've heard a good deal about a certain celebrated Chancery will case of the same name, you begin to think, and you were never more correct in your life, if I don't look about me, I may get into trouble about this. So you take me into your confidence, don't you? Don't you?
Couldn't keep you out.
And we arranged to deliver it to Mr. Jarndyce here on no conditions. If it's valuable, you trust to him for your reward. Eh? Eh?
So you say.
Hand it over, then. Here.
Mr. Bucket, whatever this is worth to anyone, I'm greatly obliged to you. If it is of any worth, I'll see that Mr. Smallweed is remunerated accordingly.
According to its value, Mr. Smallweed, not according to your own merits. You needn't be afraid of that.
Mr. Jarndyce, have you perused this?
No, Mr. Kenge, I thought it best to bring it straight to you.
But, my dear sir, it is a will of later date than any in the suit, and it is duly executed and attested. It reduces your interest considerably, although still leaving it a handsome one, and it materially advances the interests of Mr. Richard Carstone and Miss Ada Clare, now Mrs. Richard Carstone. In next term it will be an interesting factor in the case.
Next term was very near indeed, when my guardian was called out of town and went down to Yorkshire on Mr. Woodcourt's business. A few days after he left, He sent me a letter asking me to join him there. I travelled all day, wondering why I should be wanted. But at supper in the hotel, he told me.
Full of curiosity, no doubt, Dame Durden, to know why I've brought you here.
Well, Durden, I am a little curious.
Then I won't spoil your night's rest by postponing my explanation till tomorrow morning. I have long wanted to show to Woodcourt my gratitude for all he did for Joe, for all he's doing for Richard, and for his value to us all. So, when he decided to settle here, I thought I'd ask him to accept some unpretending and suitable place to lay his head in. I have found such a house, and I've been making it habitable for him. But I am not housekeeper enough to know if things are all as they should be. So, I sent for the best little housekeeper in the world to give her opinion.
Oh, how good you are.
You make too much of it. But I'm delighted that you approve. Tomorrow morning, we shall go there.
It was a most beautiful summer morning. The garden was laid out just as mine was at home. We went by way of a pretty little orchard to the house itself, a cottage of dolls' rooms, but such a lovely place, so tranquil and beautiful, with rich and smiling country spread all around it. As we went through the pretty rooms, I saw in everything all my little tastes and fancies. I could not say enough to admire it, but with a pang, I thought, would it not have been better and happier for Alan Woodcourt's peace not to have me brought before him at every turn?
And now, last of all, for the name of this house.
What is it called?
Come and see. But can't you guess? Here, written above the porch.
House.
Yes. Bleak House.
What does it mean?
My darling girl, when I asked you to marry me, I had my own happiness too much in view, although I thought of you also. But soon I began to doubt whether what I asked would really make you happy. And when Woodcourt came home, I had no doubt at all. Oh, there, there, my child. You may weep in my arms. I am your guardian and your father now. Oh, I've long been in Alan Woodcourt's confidence, but until yesterday, he was not in mine. When he spoke to you, he spoke with my knowledge and consent. Though I gave him no encouragement, today's surprise was my great reward. And I was too miserly to part with a scrap of it. he is here.
Alan! Sir! Have you told her?
Yes. Take from me a willing gift. The best wife a man ever had. This is Bleak House. This day I give this house its little mistress. And before God, it is the brightest day in all my life.
What happiness was ours that day. It was arranged that Alan and I would be married before the month was out, but we decided that the time we took possession of our little house would depend on Richard and Ada. When my guardian and I got back to London, we found that a young man had called three times that day, and left word that he would call again that night. He left his card three times. Mr. Guppy.
Mr. Guppy and Mrs. Guppy.
Oh, Miss Summerson. Oh, I didn't know I'd have the pleasure of seeing you, sir. How do you do?
How do you do, Mr. Guppy?
Well, thank you, sir. I'm tolerable. Allow me to introduce my mother. This is Mrs. Guppy of Old Street Road. Oh,
good Mrs. evening, ma'am. Will you sit down? Yeah, there. Well, sir?
Well, Mr. Jarndyce, I had an idea that I'd see Miss Summerson by herself, and was not quite prepared for your esteemed presence, but Perhaps she has told you what passed between us on a former occasion.
She has.
Ah, well, that makes matters easier. Sir, I have come out my articles at Kenjin Carboys, and I'm now admitted to the role of attorneys. I have taken out my certificate, and if it would be any satisfaction to you to see it...
Thank you, Mr. Guppy. I'm quite willing. I believe I use the legal phrase to admit the certificate.
I brought it with me in case, sir. I've no capital myself, but my mother has a little property which takes the form of an annuity. So a few pounds for expenses out of pocket in conducting business would never be wanting, free of interest, which is an advantage, you know.
Yes, certainly an advantage.
I've taken an house in Walcott Square, Lambeth, a six-roomer, exclusive of kitchens, and, in the opinion of my friends, a commodious tenement. My mother will live there when her present quarters in the Old Street Road should have ceased and expired. Now, I need not tell you, sir, that Miss Summerson's image was formally imprinted on my heart, and I made her a proposal of marriage.
That I have heard.
Circumstances over which I had no control wrecked that image for a time, but I now find it is not eradicated. Its influence is still tremendous. So I'm now willing to overlook the circumstances over which none of us have any control and to renew my proposal to Miss Summerson. I do not consider that in making this offer I am by any means throwing myself away, nor is that the opinion of my friends. But there are circumstances which I submit may be taken into account as a set-off against any little drawbacks of mine.
I take it upon myself to reply to your proposals on behalf of Miss Summerson. Yeah. She's very sensible of your handsome intentions and wishes you good evening and wishes you well.
But is that tantamount to acceptance or rejection or consideration?
To decided rejection.
Indeed? Well, then, Mother, we won't remain where we ain't wanted.
Get along with you. What do you mean? Ain't my son good enough for you? Mother. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Get out of there.
Mrs. Guppy, it's hardly reasonable to ask me to get out of my own room.
I don't care for that. Get out. If we aren't good enough, go and get someone who is. Go along and find him.
Mother, will you hold your tongue?
No, I won't. Not unless he gets out. I won't.
Mother, come along.
Let go my arm, William. Let him go and find someone as is good enough for him. Let him go out, I say. Let him get out!
That was the last time I saw Mr. Guppy. The term had commenced, and Mr. Kench told my guardian that the case would come on in 2 days. As I had sufficient hopes of the will to be in a flutter about it, Alan and I agreed to go to court that morning. It was to come on at Westminster. And when we came to the hall, we found that the day's business had begun. Worse than that, there was an unusual crowd in the Court of Chancery. It was full to the door, and we could neither see nor hear what was going on. But it appeared to be something that made the professional gentleman very merry.
What is it? What case is on?
What? Jarndyce and Jarndyce.
Do you know what's happening?
No one ever knows that, sir. But it seems it's over.
Over for the day?
No, over for good.
Sir, do those papers concern Jarndyce and Jarndyce?
Yes.
It's over then?
Yes, it's all up with it at last. Shut us in then, Mr. Woodcock.
Indeed. Yes, truly. How do you do? Glad to see you.
How do you do?
Mr. Jarndyce is not here.
No, he never comes to court.
It is as well he isn't here today. His indomitable singularity of opinion might have been strengthened. Oh? Perhaps not reasonably, but it might have been strengthened.
What has been done today?
Why, not much has been done. Not much. We have been checked. Brought up suddenly, I would say, upon the, shall I term it, threshold?
Is this will considered a genuine document, sir? Will you tell us that?
Most certainly, if I could. But we have not gone into it.
We have not gone into it.
You are to reflect, Mr. Woodcourt, that this has been a protracted case, that this has been a complex case. It has been termed, not inaptly, a monument of chancery procedure.
And patience has sat on it a long time.
That's very good, sir. Very good. You are further to reflect that on the numerous difficulties and forms of procedure of this great case, there has been expended study, ability, eloquence, knowledge, intellect. If the public have the benefit, and the country the adornment of this great grasp,
It must be paid for.
Mr. Kent, do I understand that the whole estate has been absorbed in costs?
Yeah, I believe so. And Mr. Vholes, what do you say?
I believe so.
And thus the suit lapses and melts away?
Probably. Yeah, Mr. Vholes?
Probably.
This will break Richard's heart.
In case you should be wanting Mr. Caesar, you'll find him in court. Good day, sir. Good day, Miss Summerson.
Good day.
Dear love, leave him to me for a little while. Go home. Tell your guardian and come to Ada by and by.
Me, guardian.
No. You must see him first, my dear, and find how he is. I'll wait at the door.
Esther? I thought I knew your step. Oh, Esther.
How is he?
Very bad. He has asked for you, though. Alan Woodcourt found him, sitting in the corner of the court like a stone figure. When he was roused, he started up and tried to shout something at the judge, but his mouth filled with blood, and he collapsed. Alan has brought him home.
Esther? Is that you?
Yes. Dear Richard.
Dame Durden. Kiss me, my dear. Where is Woodcourt?
I'm here, Richard.
There's someone behind you, Esther. At the door. Who is it?
It is your cousin John, Richard.
John Jarndyce?
Yes.
Oh, sir, you are a good man.
Oh, my dear Richard. The clouds have died away, and it is bright again. We can see now. How are you?
Very weak, sir. But I hope to be stronger. I have to begin the world.
Well said.
I won't begin it in the old way. I've learned a lesson. It was a hard one, but I've learned it.
Good, my boy.
I was thinking. I would so like to see their house, Esther's Woodcourt's. If I could be taken there when I begin to recover my strength, I feel I should get well, sooner there than anywhere.
Why, I've been thinking that too, Rick, and so has Esther.
Oh, yes.
I dare say her husband won't object.
When I get to Bleak House, I'll have much to tell you, sir. You'll go there, won't you?
Of course, Rick.
They've been telling me how you planned it and remembered all Esther's tastes and ways. It'll be like coming to the old Bleak House again.
Well, you'll come there too, I hope. I'm a solitary man now, and it'll be a charity to come and see me, you and Ada.
It was a troubled dream.
Oh, nothing more.
As you're a good man, you can pass it as such and forgive and pity the dreamer.
Indeed I can. What am I but another dreamer, Rick?
I will begin the world.
Richard.
When shall I go from this place to that pleasant country where the old times are? Where I can tell what Ada has been to me. Where I'll prepare to be a guide to my unborn child. When shall I go?
Dear Rick, when you are strong enough.
Ada, my darling, I've done you many wrongs.
Oh, no. No.
I've fallen like a poor stray shadow on your way. I've married you to poverty and trouble. I've scattered your means to the winds. Will you forgive all this, my Ada, before I begin the world?
My darling. She bent to kiss him. He drew his arms close around her, and with one parting sob, began the world. Not this world, oh, not this. The world that sets this right. When all was still, at a late hour, poor, crazed Miss Flight came weeping to me and told me she'd given her birds their liberty.
For many weeks, I never left Ada. The little child who was to have done so much was born before the turf was planted on his father's grave. We gave him his father's name. So, I have been married now for 7 happy years. Ada and the boy live with my guardian in the old Bleak House, although they all spend much time here in Yorkshire with us, and in our pretty house, we've built my guardian a growlery. To Ada and her boy, he is the fondest father. He is my husband's dearest friend and my children's darling. To me, he is what he always was. And what name can I give to that? We are not rich, but we have prospered, and we have quite enough. I never walk out with my husband, but I hear the people bless him. I never go into a house, but I hear his praises or see them in grateful eyes. The people even praise me as the doctor's wife, but they like me for his sake, I know.
Esther, is that you? Hmm? My precious little woman, what are you doing out here so late?
The moon so bright and the night so delicious. I've just been sitting here on the porch thinking.
And what have you been thinking about?
I'm almost ashamed to tell you, but I will. I've been thinking about my old looks, such as they were.
And what have you been thinking about them?
That you couldn't have loved me more, even if I'd kept them.
Such as they were.
Such as they were, of course.
Esther, do you ever look in the glass?
Of course I do. You see me do it.
Then how do you not know? My dearest, you're prettier now than ever you were.
I did not know that. I'm not certain that I know it now. But I know that my dearest little pets are very pretty, and that my darling Ada is very beautiful, and that my husband is very handsome, and that my guardian has the brightest and most benevolent face that ever was seen, and that they can very well do without much beauty in me. Even supposing...
In the final episode of Charles Dickens's Bleak House, dramatized by Betty Davis, the part of Esther Summerson was played by Brenda Blethyn and Mr. Jarndyce by Michael Bryant. Inspector Bucket, Douglas Livingstone. Richard, Andrew Sear. Ada, Maggie Wilkinson. Alan Woodcourt, Adam Barham. Mr. Guppy, William Nye. Sir Leicester Dedlock, Jack May. Trooper George, Michael Graham Cox. Mrs. Rouncewell, Margot Boyd. Grandfather Smallweed, Patrick Troughton. Miss Flight, Sylvia Coleridge. Mr. Kenge, Philip Voss. Mr. Voles, Ronald Herdman. With Gladys Spencer, Stella Forge, Alan Dudley, John Livesey, Michael McStay, Stephen Thorne, and Steve Hodson. And Simon Cadell as Charles Dickens. Technical presentation by Peter Novis and David Greenwood, assisted by Diana Barkham, Paul Pearson, David Chilton, and Vanessa Elmer. The serial was directed by Jane Morgan.